SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. And at our website too, stevebick.com. And for those of you that have been listening to the replay, and I know there's a lot of you. In fact, already at the meet this summer, I've heard from a bunch of people that some I've met for the first time that have talked about how, you know, they're in the car, you know, 7:30 to 9:30, you know, so they hear an hour and a half or an hour of the day before and so forth. I don't know how we top what you just heard from Dale Romans. Dale was absolutely at his best. He always brings the A game. But that was a particularly rollicking. He's an American original, a national treasure, however you want to define the one and only Dale Romans. And in fact, through the magic of Facebook, I feel terrible because it was today's John Sadler's birthday. If I had known that, I know that it gives you the opportunity to see it a day or two ahead. I wish I had known that. So if you see John, for those of you that are out at Del Mar, and of course it's early, it's 6 there. So when you see John today, this morning, it's a dark day, of course, but wish John Sadler a happy and healthy birthday. Speaking of healthy, let me get the details out of the way quickly, because there is a chance that that I have to run out of here between now and noon. I think probably we'll be okay for the show today, but there is a chance that I get called to Albany Med. The eye thing, you know, to pull one of the great moments from Mad Men, when Pete finds out that his mother has been thrown overboard by Manolo, not great, Bob. the eye is not good. The eye's verkackt. Everybody keeps saying that I talk to, I have no idea how this happened. So the net result is they couldn't do the procedure yesterday in the office. They kind of laughed at me and scoffed at me. Oh, no, we can't do it here. You have to go. It's an operation. Yeah. So we're on call for that's another discovery today, yesterday, that we came across. There, apparently, you know, the operating theater is at a premium. And the eye people are they're on the pay no mind list. Yeah, there you go. The scene from Goodfellas. What do you got me on the pay no mind list? Yeah, the eye people, the eye surgeons, they have to more or less wait until everybody else has been operated on, and then they say, "Okay, you can come in. You can come in and operate on the eye now." So we're on call at Albany Med, and sometime today. And apparently, when they say on call, it could be 9 o'clock tonight. It's just unbelievable. So they said starting at 7:30. Sorry, they took the food away like you do for the cat and the dog. They took the feed bowl. They took the feed tub away. this is what it's going to be like for horses when we stupidly stop Lasix. Yeah, we're going to take the water away. We're going to take the feed tub away. Yeah. And Tina came and snatched a cup of coffee out of my hand. They said coffee was okay. And then they said, but just one cup. So I was on my second cup, and Tina came and literally took it out of my hand. So this is all the good news, by the way. This is all the good news. It's unbelievable. They went through this whole thing. It's it's just they're going to put like a band around the eye, and then they put an air bubble, a gas bubble inside, and I've got to lay on my stomach for 10 days to 2 weeks. Yeah, you can't be upright. You can every 45 minutes you can stand up and walk around for 5 minutes, and then back on your stomach. And I was talking to Frank Miramonte. Frank said he had either a friend, he said, that went through this, and I'm sure some of you are listening and have the same. It's just unbelievable. And it's not like I'm a sparring partner for Ken Norton. I it's just crazy. So this will be the last show for certainly for the week. And as a result, I moved Sid up a day. I want to get Sid on at 10. Because the sale is next Monday and Tuesday. I'm going to miss that. I'm not happy. I'm also going to miss Tony. And maybe we'll reach out to Tony at 10:30 and let him know. I'm sick about this, not being able to go to the Hall of Fame induction. Well, I guess I'll watch it on the feed. I mean, all these years looking forward to My Juliet getting into the Hall of Fame. And Tony accepting the honor and holding the plaque and so forth. So and I think we're running. I think Minute Mouse is running on Sunday. And I was talking to Andy this morning already. And I said to them, I said to this, it's a two doctor. It takes a village, I guess, to repair my eye. I said to them, "Can this wait till after Labor Day?" She said, "Name's Dr. Falk," and she looked at me like I had four eyes. She said, "Labor Day." She said, "We would do it this afternoon if we could get the operating room." So. So much, so much for waiting until after the meet. So there you go. There's the news. You want the weather? There's the trifecta of movie references. We've hit them all today. that's from Big, right? That's from Big, I think. All right. On to horse racing. Enough about I have new respect for that commercial about macular degeneration. I used to listen to it with one ear. I got two of those right now. The hearing is fine. I kid because I'm scared shitless. Yeah, you don't think about this, and it's you really don't. I mean, and until Friday, I didn't really give you the details. On Friday, when I went to the optician, I didn't realize what was going on until they give you that stick you hold, and there's a hole on one side and a hole and blank on the other. So first he tests my right eye, and I'm reading the lines, and then we flipped it, and I couldn't see anything. I mean, he literally, I guess I did say this yesterday, he put up the, until he put up a single letter E, which was like an Exxon sized, like one of those signs you see on the highway that, you know, that's 150 feet in the air. That was the first letter I could make out. All right, enough. Enough about me. There's a whole industry to talk about, and we'll get as much as we can with Sid. Particularly, I want to get the sale preview in. I'm not happy about not being able to discuss the, you know, ideally, if they let me, and I can, maybe by next Wednesday, that'd be great. If we could recap the sale and preview the New York sale, that'd be all right. Anyway, we got Dick coming up, and I want to talk that surface issue with Dick that I brought up yesterday, the rain, the open racetrack, and the real authentic mud. We're going to, because he and I talked about it Sunday at the track. And we got Pete. Pete is at yoga right now. He might be on his way back. He might be walking back from yoga. I'm telling you, Pete's the new age pundit. He's it's ridiculous. And Sid and Andy, we'll have Andy will take a look at tomorrow's pick six carryover, and we'll get his thoughts about the giant performances, you know, the individual performances and the wild Jim Dandy. And by the way, speaking of the individual performances, let me give you the result of the poll yesterday, and got 400 votes, which is cool. And thanks for everybody for participating. I asked that sort of casual question yesterday morning before the show. I said, what did or do you prefer? Stunning individual efforts, Chancelot and Imperial Hint, and, of course, also the Maiden, Dennis's moment that we talked about. Or how about the Baffert Arrogate sibling? Immediate impact, or a knockdown, drag out, shoulder to shoulder battle like you got from Enable and Crystal Ocean, and also from Ollie's Candy and Secret Spice. And frankly, see, Ollie's Candy, Secret Spice, and the Clement Hirsch, that finished fourth with only 8% of the vote. So about 32, 33 votes. But I think that's partly because most people may not have really had a chance to see the Clement Hirsch. I think if you actually, you know, if you get caught up and you saw that Clement Hirsch, the Ollie's Candy Secret Spice would have gotten more votes. Enable Crystal Ocean, 41% of the vote. Chancelot, 30%. And Imperial Hint, 22%. What's interesting about that, with 402 votes, basically it's a 50-50 split. If you add up the individual efforts versus the mano a mano. So people just love racing. What's the difference? Great individual efforts or two horses or more. Doesn't have to be just a two horse confrontation, can be multiple wars, but I thought that was fun. So thanks everybody for voting, and when Pete joins us, we'll also get a chance to thank everybody and update you on the third and fourth feeders in Beat Beck and it was kind of what we thought, a little bit anyway. A quick overview. You had another 2,000 people play, which is awesome. Thank you for playing in. So far, in the four opportunities, we've had 629 people qualified. And what's notable is how competitive the Bowling Green was as a contest race. There were 1,100 entries on Saturday, and only 149 people picked Channel Cat. It shows you how competitive, how tough that that Bowling Green was. And then on Sunday, 900 entries. Sunday's always a little bit less than Saturday, and that's true industry-wide. Sunday is never as big a handle day as Saturday. But more people were all over Chancelot. They were prepared. 185 qualifiers. I went with Nitrous. And, of course, on Saturday went with Sadler's Joy. But it just shows you how tough the Bowling Green was. And people didn't screw around for basically, 860. So, I mean, what is that? 20%. A little over 20% tabbed Chancelot. And he was the favorite. And I'll tell you, that price is going to look awfully generous in retrospect, right? Down the road. Yesterday, by the way, speaking of prices, and speaking of Dale Romans, that was okay yesterday, right? Did some of you, I know a couple people, I got a couple of notes. Lemon Scat, just as we discussed for Dale's man, Frank Jones. Frank, like a second father to Dale. And sure enough, Lemon Scat, 780, went off basically as marginal third choice, co-second choice, but a nice 780. And, you know, later, actually, the Jordan Blair's got a nice horse. That Portal has won two or three straight. And at Philly, too, that the horses we talked about, the other Navarro, paid $16.40. And Linda Rice snuck in and won with American Power, $8.40. Let's take a break first of the morning. Come back with Vic Powell. Get it going at the race.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
All right, carry the four, plus this, I got that. All right, 26,876. What's that? That's how many races you could have bet last summer on ExpressBet. Haven't signed up for an account yet? What are you waiting for? On top of all those races, ExpressBet's giving away 25 million XB rewards points with promotions at Saratoga, Del Mar, and more. Plus, ExpressBet's Fun in the Sun Handicapping Tournament features $120,000 in prizes, including seats to the 2020 Pegasus Betting Championship. I know, I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you here, but here's one more. 500. That's the sign-up bonus you could get when you sign up for ExpressBet. So let's recap. 26,000 races, $500 sign-up bonus, $120,000 handicapping tournament, and 25 million rewards points. Hey, this math just adds up. ExpressBet is your way to play this summer. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Echobase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm going to Chicago. That's the last place my baby stayed.
Hitchhike round the world.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes into Tuesday. Going to start with Dick Powell, and we're going to talk, you know, Presque Isle and so forth, and some Saratoga. But we're going to start with surface issue, because Dick is, it's really kind of a life study, and we reach out to Dick on this topic often, informally. But we saw something at Saratoga starting Thursday with that flash flood, essentially, a storm that had like a 0.5% chance of hitting Saratoga and somehow managed to not just hit Saratoga, but park itself over the racetrack. It, just crazy. And it caught the team kind of flat-footed, and they didn't get a chance to seal the track. But frankly, Dick, in retrospect, I like what happened, and it's a valuable lesson. And I'm wondering, you know, if this dialogue can be furthered going forward, and you know, widened about leaving racetracks open, stop sealing them, and letting a muddy track be, you know, the result the next day. It took until Saturday for that track to dry out completely, and it was really like a throwback experience. It also resulted in a bit of a dead rail, which nobody remembers what those were like. Good morning.
Yeah, definitely, Steve. Where I sit, the storm came in from the back. So if you're in the backyard picnic area, you might have seen the dark clouds. We didn't. We noticed the sun wasn't as bright as it had been. But my friend had gotten this alert on his phone like 20 minutes before the storm hit, about a storm coming. Now, normal protocol is when there's a turf race, and there was a 1 3/8 turf race, is race 4, you would seal the track after race 3 and just keep it sealed until 4 is over, 5 is about to be run, and then you go out and have it. So for some reason, that didn't happen. It's hard to describe the rain. You got to go back and watch the replay of race 4. The second time they're going around, because it was 1 3/8. You cannot see the horses on the far turn. It was just, the rain was that thick and heavy. So now all that water got into the track. They then, as soon as the horses from race 4 were unsaddled and taken away, then they came out with the tractors with the floats on them. They were going the opposite direction, and they were going around and around and around. They kept the horses in the paddock for race 5, thinking that they could get the track back. And then they wound up canceling the whole day. I agree with you. I think there's this rush to get to fast, that there's some theory out there in the cosmos that says people will bet more money if the track is fast than if the track is muddy. Maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But I think we're so against having a wet, muddy track that we go to these heroic measures, which oftentimes create safety issues with the track being too hard. So the track got more water than it would have. Now, I disagree with you a little bit. Had they sealed it correctly, the risk you're running is losing parts of your track. The drainage is just going to be terrible, and you know, you could have parts of your track draining away, and now you got even bigger problems. So you seal it, the water goes off the top, it doesn't really soak in. That's usually the protocol. For some reason, that wasn't followed on Thursday. So Friday was a real throwback, as you said. Going to a track, sunny, 90 degrees, and it's muddy the entire day, because all that water had not only soaked in, but then had been compressed down after it had soaked in by sealing the track. So luckily we got through the races, that sequence of events that I'm always worried about, luckily didn't take place. But what it evolved into is a track that, the way I describe it is, it's returning energy, that if you were not fast, you continued to go fast, and that the energy you were putting in was not being taken away by the track, it was being returned. So looking at the races from Saturday, there's not a lot of stickouts, not that we run that many dirt races anymore, but there's not a lot of stickouts in terms of main track sprints being outrageously fast until the Vanderbilt, and then Imperial runs a hole in the wind. And they had, I mean, you think about 150 years of racing. I mean, how many races will run at Saratoga going 6 furlongs in the dirt? I mean, there had to have been thousands and thousands, and no one had ever gone below 108 for 6 furlongs. So
yep.
What Imperial Hint did, and he's fully capable of it because it was a perfect replica of last year's winning performance. Sat off the pace, loomed boldly on the turn. Castellano hasn't moved a muscle, turns for home, whoosh, pulls away, wins easily. That was just remarkable, especially at the age of 6. And then the next day we saw something even crazy with Chancelot just gunning to the front and just kept pouring it on, and with no one pushing him, just barely misses the track record to 6.5 furlongs, and tactically went faster going 6 furlongs than Imperial Hint did, except with that running start at 6.5 furlongs. They have a pretty good head of steam before
right.
at the timing. But both races were just unbelievably fast and dominant, but to me, track related. If you're an old horse racing fan and you pick up the track program and it would show the track records for each distance, well, May 19th, 1973, there were 3 track records set on the same day. And Jerry Brown will tell you how little cushion the tracks had back then. They were under 3 inches. And then, sure enough, a couple weeks later, Secretariat runs 224, mile and a half on dirt. So back then, that track was just groomed for speed. This one kind of inadvertently wound up being groomed for speed.
And one thing that was notable, haven't seen an aftermath, a Monday, Tuesday aftermath, the note from the Navarro barn, but both Sunday morning when we had Louis Carvajal on television and yesterday morning on radio, he said, I said, how did Imperial Hint come out of it? And he said, like he never ran. And I also will note that we had a new partner on two of our two year olds, the one in Florida with Chuck Simon, Claude Ray, and the Datalink gelding, and Volterine up here with Gary, the Arch filly, and her name's Melissa Rock. She came in from Kansas City to get her licensing done and all that. And it was her first time, not just at Saratoga, but her first time at any racetrack. She actually has equestrian experience, hunting, jumping. And we walked out also with another of our partner, Joe Caprio, and his wife, Patty. And I took Patty and Melissa over to the turf course to watch a race on the grass. And I noted how much give there was. It was still damp on Sunday, actually, and had a real nice composition to it. And just like you say, Dick, I mean, it was a surface, and the Chancelot race came, probably an hour and a half, 2 hours after I walked out on the racetrack. That was an ideal surface that was resulted in, and I don't know what we can do as pundits and as media members and as horse players to encourage the track superintendent group that they're going to meet. There should be an industry-wide discussion about, and it seemed to be starting over the winter, there should be an industry-wide discussion about not sealing racetracks anymore. And we'll, as handicappers, we'll all live with a muddy track. And haven't been doing the horses any favors, as you've pointed out for years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily mind sealing tracks while it's raining, but what I mind is they're not harrowed deep enough to make them appear to be fast when, if you harrow them deeper, you're turning over more soil, and you're probably going to have a muddy or a good track longer than you would when in this race to become fast. And if you can get away with not harrowing and not losing your track and stuff like that, I could understand that. Now, that can create its own safety issue because some areas might drain faster than others. When you seal it, the water should go right. I remember one year, it was the Kentucky Oaks, and I can't remember the Lucas horse. I think she was by Martha, and she won, and the track looked like glass. Now, that's has its downfall as well, but it showed you in a pouring rain, the water was just going off the top of it and not soaking in. I don't know if you had 3-4 days of heavy rain, what that would do to the track and whether it'd even be usable for any length of time. So that smarter people are going to have to figure that out. But I think it showed that, you know, it can be done. Now, they did lose 7 races on Friday, so that's not what racetracks really want to do. But do we overseal? Yeah, were we oversealing all day Thursday and into Friday? Yes. I mean, they just kept running those big green tractors the opposite direction over and over and over again. And so it's a balance like anything else. And if you're overdoing it, you're creating problems. If you just left it completely wide open, I don't know how well that would work long term. As a handicapper, I don't mind mud. I don't mind good. I don't mind sloppy. I don't mind. Years ago, you had your mud marks and things like that. I don't know. What bothers me as a handicapper is when a track is listed as fast and it's clearly not. Hmm. That's a problem.
Well, and you know, Andy talks about that all the time, about the misidentification, more on the turf as much as anything. More, you know, when the inclination is to call it firm when it clearly isn't, and that anybody can see based on the splits that you know, or when they call it good and it's obviously yielding, you know, when they're going 3/4 in 1:15, it's not good. It's not firm. It's obviously, you know, horses are slogging over it. So yeah, this is a topic, giving horse players accurate information, whether it's chart comments or track IDs, whatever. But, you know, considering all the, alleged, you know, concerns, from outside, outside the industry, not inside. This is a topic that, you know, people wouldn't, you know, they haven't followed up on it, at least so far, Dick, coming out of the winter. And, you know, everything that we know happened during the period, you know, before Dennis Moore returned and had a chance to, you know, to work over the track for several weeks at Santa Anita and try to, you know, get it back together. And of course they've been working on it, you know, since the end of the meet as well, for the fall, but, it's not, you know, limited to Santa Anita. This is a living, breathing, ongoing project, when it comes to track supers and the study of surfaces, if they've thought that they were doing the handle a favor by, you know, sealing the way they had been, that shouldn't be the priority, because we'll adjust as players, and frankly, it might even be better for players, because you may get certain extremities like you had with the dead rail. How much fun is it going to be when these horses that ran Friday and into Saturday, when they run back, and some of the horses that ended up on the wrong part of the track, and you get the opportunity to, you know, bet them back because they're going to have a more fair surface, you know, to compete over. So if you play at the game seriously, things like a dead rail, they're okay. We might curse and kick and scream when when a jock goes down inside when you know it's bad, and he obviously didn't. But long term, we'll get that money back.
And with turf racing, that should be way more scientific than it is now. I mean, whether it's a penetrometer or some kind of device to stick in the ground, and see how far it can go down on its own. But whatever they do, and they do it all over the world. And especially with our courses, we don't have undulating courses. We don't have uphill and downhill and dips and things like that. We have flat, you know, oval-type courses. So you're not going to get good to soft over here and good to firm on the straightaway or anything like that. And there's just no excuse not to have some kind of, whether it's 1 to 10 or whatever it might be, pick anything. But it should be way more scientific than just some subjective label put on it.
Well, let's turn our attention to conversation at hand. Before we talk Presque Isle, do you have some Saratoga thoughts about what we saw?
Well, before that, I was shocked to wake up to see Deep Impact died overnight.
Say that. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
Deep Impact passed away overnight.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't hear that.
He was one of my all-time favorites.
Oh.
In fact, the first time I ever left the United States was to go to Paris to see him run in the Arc de Triomphe. Me and about 20,000 Japanese were there for the race, and he was just a spectacular racehorse, spectacular sire. Now he's a sire of sires, and I'm sure Sid can talk about his impact on the breed, but he died at the age of 17 in Japan.
So
I get up this morning and check emails. I'm like, wow, that was quite a blow.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. Fun to watch, absolutely, and we'll have a lasting, very lasting.
Well, he won. There's a 2 mile race, a 3,200 meter race called the Tennis Show Spring, and he won it. And he ran 3:13 and change for just under 2 miles, and his last 800 meters was 44.8. I mean, it's like, come on, that's impossible. And if you watch the race, you see him far, far back. And then here he comes, and then he just blows by the field and just wins for fun. And just he just had it wasn't even a kick. It wasn't even like a sudden acceleration. He would just get in a drive and just impossible, always on the outside. And what killed me in the Arc de Triomphe was it was a 7-runner field, which is hard to believe in the Arc. And he winds up on the lead. With the 7 horses, they leave the gate, and no one wants to lead. So Yutaka Taki inherits the lead. That's not his running style. And he gets beat by Andre Fabre at 25-1 with Rail Link. And he ran third and came back and won the Japan Cup and the Yuri McKinnon to finish out his career and stuff. And to show you how good he was as a sire, Coolmore, which has all these females by Galileo, besides all the great colts, were breeding Galileo mares to Deep Impact. They were looking for a way of, you know, they can't breed Galileo mares back to his offspring and stuff. So Frank, a lot of them are out. So they were going to Deep Impact on a pretty regular basis and had success doing that, and looked like they were going to continue that process. But that was just, you know, age of 17, boy, he finished his breeding season this year, so we'll still have Deep Impacts at the races, but that was quite a shock to get up to see that this morning.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it, because I had not come across it yet. Well, Saratoga,
Saratoga
the two
continues. I can't pick a winner to save my life. I'm just in this, I wouldn't even call it a slump. And to show you how bad it was, and we talked about this Sunday when I ran into you, I don't even have the Presque Isle horse that shipped in for Adam Rice.
I warned you. I warned you to watch. I had him because I talked. Before the meet, I had talked to Trombetta, and Mike said that I asked him, you know, what do you use, and he says, I got some horses that have been at Presque. I think that are going to be okay. And you know, and then we've seen this early success of the Kentucky horses on the claiming side of things, Dick. And so that's what kind of prompted me to say, you know, we know that these Presque Isle horses in the fall turn up at Keeneland and win. So why wouldn't they necessarily come here and win.
And he was perfectly spotted, 25 claimants, turf sprint, gets Jose, Taylor's husband to ride, Taylor's, I think, Adam's sister, and just, you know, it was all right there. And because I've been going bad, there's times when I'm just distracted, not focused, whatever it is. And that one got by me, and the $63 exactly was even worse than the win price. So that led to much meditation.
All right, you'll be ready for the next one. Well, and the Rices, it wasn't last summer. I think it was the summer before. Do you remember? I'm not sure if it was Kevin or Adam that came in and scored a couple of times, like in the early middle part of the meet.
The horse is still running, and I was doing a bankroll for Capital TV, and that one had a big, big win bet, and I think he was paid in the $20 range. And it's a long name. I'm trying to think of it. I never will. Come on, Dick, what are you doing? How do you miss this one?
What did you make of the two individual? I mean, we obviously touched on it with Chancelot and Imperial Hint, and I've been pointing out breaking the 108 barrier, but we also ended up with a Jim Dandy that is, people are going to have to make some determinations, and the Tacitus crowd, they got to be getting a little frustrated. I mean, he seems to have more talent than the distilled results are showing, and he's been exceptionally unlucky not to have already scored out in one of these spots so far in the middle part of the year.
But Tacitus has kind of created some of his unluckiness, so he's not just a victim of circumstances, creating the circumstances that he'd become unlucky and just didn't get out of the gate on Saturday. I thought Tax had a pretty good pace advantage, that he would be forwardly placed and take advantage of, to me, going 9 furlongs on that main track. You got to be up close to the lead, and he was. And Irad rode him brilliantly. When he got challenged, he responded, and Tacitus, we'll keep his fans interested, especially going a mile and a quarter. And he's run, he ran well in the Derby, ran great in the Belmont, but he had the wide trip, and Jose never got over and saved any ground. Thought he was just tons the best, and he wasn't quite. And then Saturday, as far as the prep race, it was probably perfect. So I'm sure he'll be better for the Travers, but he's going to have to be better for the Travers because there'll be some good horses in there.
Well, exactly, and he's still going to have to make up. He's still going to have to close in. I think we're looking probably at anywhere from 10 to 14. Right now, it's tracking at 11. And for those that say, "Well, he'll get him next," you get him next time. Except, you got to keep a horse healthy and sound for another 4 weeks, and there's never a guarantee. He can go out for a jog any day and get sidelined. I mean, when you've got your opportunities in this game, that's why connections get frustrated or upset when there's miscues. And I was surprised, frankly, that Ortiz, you saw that there was a stride or two where he had to make a determination where to go, and he made the determination to go inside. I would have thought that after he got stymied on Al Gold's horse, that was also a spot with Al's horse that was making up ground late and had to go inside, and that was a mistake. And he bogged down badly, and otherwise would have won. That was against that service horse. That was a crazy put the glass down, and right away when Chateau won that race at 5-1, you know, right away the Boo Birds come out to attack Jason Service. Why don't you attack, if you're going to attack something, attack Fortune's Fool, who was supposed to be involved in the pace and was nowhere to be found. And instead of, you know, instead of having pace company, Chateau ends up on a isolated lead. It was the craziest thing ever. If I had known that Chateau was going to be alone, I would have used him. Instead, I figured, well, there's going to be pace pressure from Fortune's Fool and others, and none of it materialized. But anyway, Jose Ortiz goes inside to the dead rail, and is not, an hour later, he does the exact same thing.
Well, I figure in the Jim Bandy, if he decided not to go outside because his brother would have carried him out had he done so. So he tried to surprise him. But that's some inside baseball humor. I don't know. We see it all the time, and we wonder. I know they're on the track. They're having the firsthand experience, but kind of looking from afar, I think we see way more than they see with dead rails and various things like that. So,
well,
it's just you know, when you watch racing and you see a horse in the main track dive to the rail, it's like, oh no, that never worked. Occasionally it works, but it's very, very rarely does it. So, if he comes out okay, I mean, it'll be tough, but Tax is a really nice, nice horse. I mean, Danny does a great job with them, and he uses that pace where Tacitus is he's like a firm against Aladar. Firm won most of the time because he was the quicker, had better acceleration, and Aladar, you know, ran the whole Derby on one lead and just would always gave up advantages to a firm's speed and quickness. And I think Tax has that, and Tacitus is going to have to either become a one-run horse, just say, hey, we're going to drop back, save ground, and make the one run, or we're going to have to gain position and hopefully finish well. But yeah, I mean, you're right about letting wins go by, because these horses race so infrequently that you can't say when the next win is going to come.
Exactly.
And
well,
and,
Dick.
Now let me make one connection there. Tacitus, owned by Judmon Farm, who owns Enable, her win was just breathtaking. I mean, Frankie did everything right, bad pose, hung out, unexposed, kind of track Crystal Ocean, try to get a toe into the race from there. And then just like he did at Ascot, he makes that quick move and dares them to run him down. And instead of waiting and waiting and trying to time it right, Franklin's trying to break races open, turning for home. And he didn't break it open because Crystal Ocean responded beautifully to changed oil. But, I mean, that was just an... when you go back and look at that field and the horses that were up the track behind these two, and Waldegeist ran good for third, but Anthony Van Dyke, the Derby winner, was nowhere to be found. I mean, to Norway, Japan... You know, just not Japan, but there was a bunch of Aiden O'Brien good horses. I mean, they're just all up the track and able. Man, she has one more start, then she'll go to the Arc, try to become the only horse ever to win three Arcs in a row. Trev tried it, couldn't do it. And now she's on the cusp of doing it. And then if we get lucky, because Judmon's been so sporting, maybe we get her for the Breeders' Cup as a farewell.
That would be but awesome. That's what people are people are calling for. That I'll tell you, everybody wants them to come.
She was just so good. So that's my Judmon connection, from Tacitus to an Able.
Deck, let's. Yep.
Sid would be able to answer this better than me. If you're Judmon, you retire an Able. Well, who do you breed it to? You can't breed it a Frankel, and. Do you breed it a Kingman, or, you know, Judmon has enough stallions?
Sure.
I would breed it to see the stars, but that's just me. But that's time for another day. We'll get to Presque Isle. And the sorry that the trainer title, you know, we're more than halfway over. And Jerry Brooks continues. He's 30 wins. Teresa Connolly is at 19. She just doesn't run as many horses as Jerry's been running. Ron Potts, 16. John Bork has 14, and that's a good 22%. Tim Gurdon winning at 25%. And, you know, just Brooks got the lead right out of the start. He was the leading trainer in 2017. Teresa was the leading trainer in 2016 and last year, 2018. And now this year, Jerry Brooks is just maintaining a healthy advantage. The rider challenge last year, Morales won pretty handily. Part of that was because Gallardo obviously got a late start in riding at Presque Isle. This year he's been riding every race day, including Sundays, and not at Monmouth Park. And Gallardo has 72 wins, and Pablo is at 59. Big drop off to Scott Speed at 40, and Ron Allen, who had three winners the last couple of nights. He's in fourth, and you know, Ron is good and doesn't get the money that Gallardo and Morales get, which becomes problematic when you have a six-horse field and they're in the race. They're going to take a good chunk of that money, so you're kind of looking for horses that you're going to be able to cash a ticket on at a decent price. And oftentimes it's not those two, but it's the Ron Allens of the world and Yuba Villagomez and people like that. So when you follow a circuit pretty hard, you can make money with that mid-level rider-trainer type, because those are the ones that get underbet as opposed to the leaders that get overbet. Tonight, one of my favorites is running Nice and Easy. He's in the fifth race. Nice and Easy is 9 years old, and he has won 16 times at Presque Isle on the
Jesus,
season.
That's unbelievable.
He has 10 seconds and 5/3, so he has 31 placings out of 43 starts, $254,000 in earnings, and he's a 5-claimer.
Amazing.
He's a bottom-level claimer, and he's already won this year at the age of 9. He won wire-to-wire last time out and won 10-3. And he's just like the poster child for Tapita, keeping the horses sound and in the game and running back quickly, because he's coming back from July 10th, and that's normal 3 weeks, even 2 weeks. So Nice and Easy is in race 5 tonight. I didn't make him a selection. We're going to try to get a daily double tonight. The opener, I'm going to go with number 2, Crush It. Gallardo rides this one. He has good speed, going two turns, inside post. I expect Gallardo to either make the lead or be right up near it. And those are usually the right conditions to win going two turns. These are 8 claimers. And he was claimed for 5-2 back, made its Tapita debut last time out, and missed by a neck. So he's a logical type horse in the opening. That's number 2, Crush It. And then to complete the double, we're going to go with number 3, Dr. Coy, 6-1 morning line for Joe Martin. Dropping down a little bit in class, just missed 2 back at this distance in good time. And also number 4, Dreamer's Boy, with Gallardo riding for Dan Conway Jr., and he's 4-for-8 with that trainer, jockey-trainer combination in the last 60 days. So early double, 2 with 3-4. Race 3 is a very nice 2-year-old optional claim allowance event. Really nice horses in here. I went with number 4, Whisper Slow, 4-1 morning line from Tim Hamm. And Tim Hamm has had winners the past 2 nights at Presque Isle. He's usually shipping in from Ohio. And Tim Hamm's one of these guys, he develops young horses and sells them. And this one is owned by Don Alberto Corporation. So, well-bred daughter of Distorted Humor out of a street cry mare. Won his career debut at 7-2, going 5 furlongs. Has a 5 furlong breeze and 59 and change since that race. So I think she'll get even better. And if you want to play exact, there's number 6. Wayne Catalano comes in from Churchill with a filly well spent that broke its maiden in a turf sprint. Adds Lasix, first time to Peter, but turf sprint is handled to Peter, no problem. And there's a Spikestown filly here for Wesley Ward from Stone Street that broke its maiden at Presque Isle going 4.5 and now comes back, finds an allowance race. Mario Pino is going to ride that one. So really, really nice connections there in race number three. And then we'll go on to race number eight, the finale tonight. I'm going to go number one, Save the Drama. Shelley Radosevich trains a couple of seconds, then a nice win here. Going five, stretches out to 6.5. The long sprint speed still holds up going the longer sprints. And just should be, Gaiota should get this one into the race. I don't know if he'll have the lead or not. There's a couple others in here that might want it more than he does. But he should be saving ground all the way and have some punch in the stretch. 3-1 morning line. That's number one, Save the Drama in race number eight.
Excellent. And, you know, Dick, last week I know you delivered a nice winner, and I saw somebody on Facebook wrote a nice note and probably didn't reach you because you don't have the highest social media profile.
You know, that actually helped me professionally. Someone knew about me, but wanted to make sure that I didn't have a big social media profile for some reason. And he found out, that's right, he doesn't. And that actually worked to my advantage. So I'm one.
He's anonymous.
One.
Exactly. You're more. You're I could. Yeah. I hear you. I think there's plenty of us that would love to take that same route.
Well, I don't see myself changing anytime soon.
No, I no. You're not that you can't be taught new tricks.
No, and I'm very technically literate. I mean, you know, I worked as a technical writer for years and involved with software documentation, and no, I'm fine with computers and everything. I just don't care what you had for breakfast and stuff like that. Here's a picture, you know. No.
Well, I now go easy, go easy. Go easy on the food critiques, because the people love I've become sought out. Not they don't want to just know who we like in the fourth. They also want to know where they want to be eating wherever they go. So
I can do that without a picture.
Well, listen, I picture. You know, tells a lot. It gives everybody I'll pull out my Procter & Gamble lesson for you. All right, you're ready for a lecture. I was on a sales call in Kansas City with my regional manager, who was as good a manager as Procter Food Service had, Stan Gollinghorst, and we went to a. I think we were at one of the big hotels. And, you know, Procter, you got this big sales manual, and you got these, you got this big leather bound brochure thing. And we go in and I make a sales pitch. I sell like a pallet of Frymax, of frying oil. And, you know, go back to the car and you write the sale up and everything. And Stan said to me, "Did you watch the Royals game last night?" I said, "Well, I had it on TV." I said, "I had it on the TV, and I was actually doing stuff around the apartment." He said, "Oh, why didn't you put the radio on?" I said, "Oh, well, you know, if something happened, I could run to the TV and look." And he said, "Well, that's a lot like the sales call you just made." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you had a television under your arm, and you gave a radio sales pitch." And let me tell you something. That here I am. I'm 59 years old. It's 40 years later, or whatever, 37 years later, and I never forgot that. And I mean, that was Stan. Stan could deliver that kind of lesson like a stiletto. He was Mac the Knife. That one stuck with me, Dick. Like, I'll never forget that. How he made that snap association and drilled it home. So that there's a reason to put up pictures of your lunch on social media.
I was going to say, if Stan's still around, I guarantee he's not on Facebook with that.
That may be true. That may be true. Wow. Well, that was a homespun story. There you go.
Ironically, I was at the ophthalmologist yesterday. A couple of years ago, I went in for glasses, and they thought I had a torn retina. Slightly torn. It wasn't detached. And, you know, I've had laser treatment to keep it from spreading and stuff like that. And then I just go back regularly every 6 months for checkups. So not fun, but, boy, you got to do it.
Well, as long as while I'm strapped down there today, I don't see, you know, Laurence Olivier over me, you know, like in Marathon Man, I'll be okay. Or a scene like the Clockwork Orange has been going through my head. Alec,
yeah, singing in the rain.
Oh boy. Dick, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. This was great.
We'll be thinking about you.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Dick Powell, everybody. A little PID in the afternoon, 5:35 start, Presque Isle Downs. And boy, as I said yesterday, with Ellis having that makeup card and Philly and Presque, et cetera, and Delaware, it was a very good day racing yesterday. And while I was sitting around those, you know, the retina specialist office, we were watching the races and then afterward. So good day of racing again today, Tuesday, and then things start up tomorrow. We'll talk to Andy Serling in an hour. We'll look at that $75,000 pick six carryover. And, you know, the 20-cent Empire Six is supposed to be introduced next week as soon as the rules get published, which I think they said was going to be by August 3rd. Is that right? So maybe Sunday, or maybe they'll delay it till August 7th. But it's coming. The jackpot style. But in the meantime, here's another good carryover opportunity, $75,000 from Sunday. Take a break. Sid Fernando is going to join us. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And speaking of Sire Watch, we're going to let Sid riff on how the NIC ratings are put together as part of what pedigree consultants do for clients, considering that Sid was social media accosted yesterday and the dumbest potential challenge. Just ridiculous. So I want Sid to explain what the NIC ratings, you know, you hear an A NIC, a B NIC, and what they mean and how they figure in to the purchase and breeding decisions. And we'll get a sale preview in for Monday and Tuesday, because we're certainly not going to get it done for Friday, given our situation. So, Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, Pete Fornatel to follow, Andy Serling, and more back after this.